Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Doctor Is In. I'm your host, Paul Verhoeven, and hope you're all doing well because this week I have a very, very special guest on the show. This week I'm talking with the actor who plays one of my favourite companions from Big Finish. Her name is India Fisher, and she plays the inimitable Charlotte Pollard. And yes, inimitable is not just a real word, but it's very hard to say as well. Now, Charlie, as she's known to her friends and to the doctor, is just an absolute ray of sunshine, and India was a real, real pleasure to talk to. So I hope you enjoy this interview, and if you listen to it and you go, you know what, I really need to check out some of Charlotte Pollard's adventures with the Eighth Doctor from Big Finish, head across, start with Storm Warning, and work your way through from there. It really does change the game. In fact, it's entirely possible that this interview will create some new fans. So without further ado, please enjoy this interview with the absolutely wonderful India Fisher. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today, India. I guess I have to start off by asking what your first day was like doing your first Big Finish, because you folks were like, you were straight out of the gate. I mean, it had been a long time since there was any new Doctor Who, and I'm assuming this was a really strange experience for you. Could you talk me through your first day on the job?
Yeah, good question. Hello, Paul, by the way.
Hello.
Well, actually, my first Big Finish wasn't a McGann Doctor Who. It was a Peter Davison Doctor Who.
What?
I did something called, you think, I wasn't Charlie, was it? It was pre-Charlie. I played someone called Peril Bellamy. And she was a sort of naughty schoolgirl. Mm. And I seem to remember there was quite a lot of, I have a very bad memory, so you have to forgive me. People will be shouting at their speakers. But seem to remember there was some falling off snowy rooftops. But the thing that was amazing for me was I did it with my best mate from university. We both just happened to get the job at the same time. And I genuinely remember after the first day of recording, going back to her flat and both of us bouncing on the bed like a couple of schoolgirls going, oh, we got paid for this as well. It was the most brilliant day. And it was one of my sort of first professional gigs, really, apart from doing terrible, you know, sort of plays above pubs in, like, you know, sort of theatres above pubs where you were competing with the boxing and things like that downstairs. And but the first McGann, when they phoned me about the McGanns, Jason Hay Gallery called me and said, months later, I didn't hear anything from them. I thought, oh, well, that was nice, but that's, nothing's going to transpire from that. Mm. And he phoned and went, we're looking for a new companion for Paul McGann. And I was, I've made no secret about the fact that I was obsessed with Withnail and I. My cats were called Withnail and I. and so it really was. It was like being told, you know, do you want to be a Bond girl or something? It was, I do remember sort of going, yes, please, that'd be amazing. I was properly trying not to be a fangirl the first day. Mm. You know, I was just sort of every time he said anything, it just sounded like a line from Withnail and I. I kept having to sort of bite my tongue not to go, why have you drunk their onions? If you don't know,
You rocked up as a fan, not a Doctor Who fan,
a Doctor Who fan. I'm afraid to say I grew up with Doctor Who,
sure.
But it was I was a Star Wars girl, I'm afraid. Star Wars hit me at that right sort of 7 year old age, so Star Wars for me, but Doctor Who, I was obviously aware of Tom Baker and the hat and the scarf, and you know, that was my era. And everyone knows Doctor Who. You can't be British and not know Doctor Who. Yeah. But I wasn't a Doctor Who fangirl, but I was a massive Paul McGann fangirl. So I was just trying to be really professional and failing dismally.
So you didn't pull that off. But did you do like a chemistry test, or was your first meeting with him basically, all right, and go, you're best friends?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, there was no chemistry test. Yeah, no, it was, you are going to be his companion. We're casting you as his companion. And right. And I didn't really get that first week, I will admit, I didn't get the sort of magnitude of the fact that there had been this sort of hinterland of no Doctor Who, and then there was the Paul McGann movie, and then, like, you know, so the idea that this was, you know, a big deal in the sort of fan base of, you know, finally some new Doctor Who happening. I suppose I didn't really appreciate that until the 40th anniversary, like, convention special, and that was, like, that was crazy. Mm. That was like, oh, this is a tiny window into what it must be like to be an A-list celebrity.
That's so cool. I remember on the, what is it, the Night of the Doctor, where McGann says your name. Mm. I almost wet myself. I just screamed, because I mean, this whole time we're all sitting there going, look, Big Finish is great. All the Eighth Doctor stuff is great. Charlie's great. But it's not really like part of the, it's not really, you know.
Yeah.
And then he said it. He can't, he can't unsay that, so.
I got so many, my phone just went, bing, 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 bing. All these people were going, you're canon now. And I was like, am I? Okay, that's great. That's really nice. Thank you very much. Yeah. And you know, Russell T Davies sent me some very nice messages saying, you know, we couldn't have had Rose if Charlie hadn't happened.
Oh.
And I'll say, at the time, I was a bit like, yeah, so cast me.
Well, you might.
Tell me that.
You, like, might.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. But but now, looking back at my many, many years in my, you know, my sort of 20s, I was quite young then, I was like, well, why won't you cast me then? But now I'm like, oh, that's really nice of him to say. Like, that's really good that Charlie was, you know, Rose happened because Charlie was that stepping stone to that sort of a companion. And I like that.
That's so cool. I mean, if you're sitting there, okay, so let's flash back. You're recording your first, you know, kind of stint with McGann. You're trying to suppress the fact that you adore his work. Did you tell him? Did you admit to him how you felt? And did it ruin everything?
Yeah, no, I had to admit to him how I felt, because I kept, like, because there are so many, it's just his intonation. I just kept going. And then I think there was, quite towards the end of the week, I think he did a line from with Belle and I, and I finally went, I've been desperately trying not to do that all week. And he's a big fan of With Belle and I as well. He thinks it's a brilliant film. And so he messes around with saying quite a lot of quotes from it as well.
So
I had to admit it. And obviously, no one really dislikes being told that they're adored, do they? I don't know any actor that is going to go, like, you know, oh, well, that's really put me off you, the fact that you think I'm amazing. So, you know, I don't think it hurt in our relationship that I was, in love with him.
Do you think that informed, you know, Charlie's kind of view of the Doctor? Do you think that came through? Because she clearly, they have such an amazing rapport, and I don't think you can fake that. Or maybe you can.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know whether you can. Yeah, maybe you can. Maybe that's interesting. I mean, I informed that in Charlie, and then you don't. That's the thing. When you've been playing a character for as long as you have, and there are so many people that write for her, and I'm always amazed that so many different people write for her so well, you know, that suddenly you don't get a story that go, well, this isn't Charlie. You know, everyone seems to know who she is. And from the very first word, I would say the whole of Storm Warning, I remember thinking, well, there's no acting required for me, is there? I read Alan's script and I was like, well, it's written on the page. All I have to do is say the words and she is there, fully formed. It was amazing. But you're right. Maybe such a fangirl and, like, you know, so quietly in love with McGann made the fact that, like, yeah, Charlie, maybe someone else might have played it completely differently. We'll never know.
For me, the nice thing about companions, the good companions, is that they want to be there, and they're deeply, deeply stoked, and they're super grateful. And I don't think she ever lost that. And I mean, but were there points during her arc where you felt like the shine was off the apple, for not for you, for the character? I mean, did she get a little more? You know the one where they're both holding hands and they're walking in the void for like, what is that? Scherzo? What is that called?
Scherzo. It's a musical term, isn't it? We should all know how to say it. And over, like, you know, the 20 years, I should know how to say it, but I always forget. Yeah, you see, I loved that one. That was amazing. I am always grateful to Rob for that. And he wrote it on his honeymoon, you know.
That's
a little bit, yeah.
That's weird.
Feel a little bit guilty. Like, yeah, you're writing a love story about, like, Charlie and the Doctor on your honeymoon when really you presumably should put the pen down and enjoy your honeymoon. Yeah. But, you know, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But, yeah, so it was his thank you to us for Chimes of Midnight, which, it's the, you know, we should be thanking him for Chimes of Midnight. But, yeah, that, I thought that was an amazing story. It did split the pack a bit, didn't it? People sort of found it a bit weird. And I wonder whether the whole morphing into one another thing just went a step too far for people. I don't know. But now, you know, now apparently the Doctor and, you know, companions are kissing all the time, aren't they? You know, it's like it was a big deal back then. But getting back to your original thing, I completely agree. I never understood why there were the slightly stroppy companions. It's like, well, go away then. Don't be there. If you don't want to be there, why are you hanging around? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On your way, if you don't want to do this, then no one's stopping you. You know, are you manacled to someone? I don't think you are. Are you trapped under something heavy? No. So, yeah, I always loved the fact that Charlie was properly up for it in all its forms, and whatever alien was thrown at her, sometimes quite literally, she was determined to do it. And I love that about her. And I don't know whether it ever waned. I think the whole Divergent universe went a bit weird, but I don't think her love of being there or the adventure ever waned. And I think that still carries on. But luckily, people aren't finding it annoying. You know, you sort of wonder, like, are people going to get like, oh, God's sake, Charlie, just, you know, be a bit pissed off once in a while. Sorry, am I allowed to say that?
Say whatever you want. Yeah. We live in an age, I remember Richard Curtis was, he was talking about people deriding his films and Love Actually and whatnot. And he was basically saying, look, he resented the idea that gritty, the realism was equated with grittiness and darkness. And he said, if you go to an airport and you watch people happy to see each other, that's far more realistic and statistically far more common. So how am I have my problem. I have issues with Love Actually. I think Notting Hill's a work.
Yeah.
But there's something nice about just a companion, especially in this era, who is relentlessly enthusiastic and optimistic. I mean, do you have that side of you that is just like up for an adventure at any point?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't had many adventures. I think my life is fairly mundane, but I'm not a sort of glass half empty person. I don't like, you know, I don't really have a dark side. I suppose I am sort of more optimistic than not, I think. So I suppose, again, I probably, you don't know how much your how much I influence the character and how much the character influences your portrayal of it, is what I mean. So I think I'm an optimistic person, and so I find it easy to play optimism rather than, yeah, I find, as you say, all this, like, at the moment, every single thing on telly at the moment is like, you know, if you're having issues with this, then please, you know, speak to us after the programme. You're like, oh, God, it's all about, you know, death and mental health. And you're just like, oh, I'd quite like something a bit cheery. I quite often say, can we just watch something funny? Can I watch something funny, please? I just need to, yeah. So, yeah, I find relentless optimism fairly easy.
I can tell. I could really tell. But, I mean, I'm not getting a kind of Scandi Noir vibe from you. I mean, you do have...
No, I don't do Scandi Noir. No, more sort of, you know, chubbly English Rose, like, you know, let's just have a pie type thing.
I mean, if you want. I mean, it won't work via Zoom, but, God, I would murder a pie right now. Because every time I talk to someone from Who, I mean, I talked to Sylvester last week and Colin before that, and I've talked to Sophie. Yeah. I'm rattling through, and it's great. But everyone I talk to there seems to, they hear I'm in Australia and they're like, oh, God, I'd love to be there. But I just miss England and I miss the food and I miss the crappy
weather.
And, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's got its issues.
How long were you here then?
You know, just for bits and bobs, like, you know, but I just, okay, in Australia, we were raised watching the ABC, and the ABC is just the BBC. So we would just watch British television. It was just like Super Ted and Banana Man. And it was, you know, it was the goodies, and it was Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And so
I
think what happened was when I got taken over there for the first time, I just felt like I was home. I mean,
interesting.
Whereas you have the sunny disposition of a not British person. You know what I mean?
The British people don't have a sunny disposition. I don't know. I'm always amazed that people want to move to England. You're like, why? I've got friends that they're from California and from New Zealand, and you think, and what drew you to this tiny insular, rainy, and it's getting more, you know, xenophobic island? Like, you know, why do you want to do that? Yeah, so Australia was the one place I traveled. Right. I did a tour round on my own on the back of a Doctor Who convention, actually, because I got taken out there for a Doctor Who convention. And I thought, I'm never going to have the money to go to Australia again. I'm going to, and I drove the Great Ocean Road on my own. Went to the Outback.
That's great. We're right near there. It's beautiful.
Oh, are you? Absolutely stunning. And it was the only place I remember sitting. Is it, what's the, like on the bay look overlooking Sydney, like Opera House, is it?
Governor Macquarie Seat, maybe.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Macquarie Seat. And I remember sitting there. It was the day before I was traveling back. And it's the only time I've ever been somewhere. And I thought, why am I going home? Why? What is there to send me home? And it was just the fact that I was the other side of the world from all my family. Otherwise, I thought, I love it here. This is amazing.
And when was this?
I get why people emigrate to... Oh, well, when was this? This was early who? So 2000s?
So
I was in my 20s.
You've been doing Doctor Who for a while. Don't pull that face.
I know, it makes me feel very old. It was when I was interviewed the other day for Doctor Who magazine, and you could tell I'd been doing Doctor Who longer than the person interviewing me was alive. And he said, because he started by saying, so you've been doing, I hope you don't mind me saying, you've been doing it for 20 years. And I was like, no, I don't mind you saying, that's how long I've been doing it. And I thought, oh God, you're 20, aren't you? Yeah. Basically, you're saying, I hope you don't mind me saying, you're really old. You've been doing this all my life.
There are people I hate for their age. Because I'm like, I'm 38. I'm like 40 in 2 years. And even people. No, I know that's young. I know.
Go away.
I know, but the moustache adds like 50 years. And then
you know, you're right. Yeah, the tash does give you a certain gravitas.
I look like a private detective from Hawaii. That's the look I'm...
Yeah, there is. Well, the shirt is also helping that Hawaiian PI look. I like it, though. It's excellent.
Now, as far as... by the way, when I said you've been doing it for a while, what I actually meant to say was you've been around whilst multiple kind of evolutions of the show on TV have happened.
Yeah.
Is there a kind of like morbid curiosity? Do you watch with judgment and go, you don't really get to kind of sink into character as much as we do at Big Finish? Or are you a fan now?
I'm not, I'm afraid. I'm terribly sorry. I don't watch it.
That's fine.
I'm really sorry, people. I admitted to conventions and things like that. Mm. I'm not a fan. And you can see people going, I like you a little bit less now. But I hope my honesty. So I suppose it's just sort of always gone on in the background, and I've always just been waiting for Charlie to be killed off. And to be fair, she has been killed off several times, but the joy of space travel is that then they can go, oh no, you're now with a different doctor, or oh no, we're doing these, the ones that we've just recorded some with McGann that I think fit in earlier than, it's like, so the joy of it's a loop, isn't it? You can carry on forever and ever with space travel, because you just go, oh well, yeah, no, we've just traveled back to this and that. And then of course we've got the Charlie spin-off series. Never thought that would happen. That's extraordinary. And
so
I'm amazed that people like it, because it's sort of Charlie being the doctor, and I get my own little companion, who is just the gorgeous James Joyce, who I love. And great name as well. I mean, who, how can you not love someone called James Joyce?
Do you have an action figure yet? Is there an action figure in the works?
No! No. God, can you imagine? No. Slightly frumpy action figure. But that's what I love about people that do all these sort of, you know, the fan art and things like that. You go, oh, is that what you imagine I look? Because, of course, for me, Charlie looks like me, because that's what I... But then, obviously, for other people who only listen to it, they have a completely different view of what Charlie looks like. And it's like, oh, wow, she looks really sort of, you know, slim and action. And, like, that's amazing.
Really?
Because I just think of myself as, like, yeah, middle-aged.
I'm sorry. That's bullshit. You look exactly like her. And you act exactly like her. And it's really refreshing, because occasionally you talk to an actor who plays a character and I'm like, you're not. But I feel like, yeah, you know, you look like Charlie to me, you know?
Well, I suppose there is an element of the fact that, like, the artwork on the cover and things like that, they do use my face, but it's always on a much better body.
No, really?
No, they have. Oh, it's not my body. They've been. I mean, there were some. They're hilarious. Whereas, I think it was when I can't remember who did the artwork, but it was definitely my face superimposed onto a male, because they could only find. It was really early on, and the only steward's sort of outfit they could find was on a boy. So it was me on a boy's body. Because my face sort of morphed onto a boy's body. It was like sort of bad, like, yeah, sort of revenge porn. Yeah.
No, you went in a very different direction there.
Yeah, sorry.
No, as far as revenge goes, I mean, transplanting your head onto the boy, I mean, if
body should, of a boy.
Mm. Yeah, that should be a whole story arc, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd do if I was dumped onto the body of a boy. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't know where to start.
There was definitely a hint of an Adam's apple. I was like, there's an Adam's apple on that. Should no one take that out?
No, it's alluring.
That's not me. Yeah, exactly. Charlie obviously has a very pronounced Adam's apple.
Yeah, it's canon. I mean, one of the things that people say about Big Finish, it has the feel of prestige TV now. It's got the kind of, you know, it does have a kind of, like, it sounds extraordinarily expensive and it does stuff the TV show wishes it could do. I mean, I kind of like that you're not a fan of the show. Well, when you say not a fan, what you mean is it's not like you hate the show. You're just not actively invested.
No. Yeah. God, no, I don't hate it in any way, shape or form. I think, you know, it's, I just don't watch it. You know, I just, like, you know, and yeah, I mean, it's that bit. But I'm with you on Big Finish. Oh. I remember really early on, their whole soundscape and the whole, you know, the idea that they would talk to me about, oh, Charlie's theme. And I'd be like, I have a theme? That's amazing. Every time she comes on, there's a musical theme that happened. And, you know, and you think, and then you'd listen to, now, people always used to laugh at me about this, a Radio 4 play. I once said a Radio 4 play, and an American audience were just like, you've just said foreplay. It was like, yeah, sorry, Radio 4 play. And it would be like, it was like they were doing it in their bedroom. Mm. I mean, it sort of sounded like, it was like, oh, wow. Okay, and this is one of our prestige radio channels, yeah, and it just sounds dead. Whereas Big Finish, right from the off, they created this whole soundscape and world that I think, as you say, sounds so impressive and immersive. And, you know, every time I don't often listen to them because I find it very difficult to listen to anything that's got me in it. But I did Chime to Midnight the other, like, so I think it was during lockdown. I had to do a tweet-a-thon for it, or tweet along with it. And so I sat and listened to it again. And Nigel, my husband, did as well. And he was like, this is amazing. Mm. And it is. It's just, you know, they are totally immersive. And, you know, they deserve all their success. I think they're, you know, they've started off as fanboys, but they have taken it to a whole other level.
Bananas. I mean, I started listening to these things a long time ago, and this is not part of the interview, but about, I think, a year ago, I became friends with Nick Briggs and we started talking.
Yeah.
And I pitched a short trip at him and they bought it. So it's been recorded, like, in 2 weeks, my first short trip. Yeah. It's lovely. It's lovely. And also it's really weird because I was sitting there going, I wanted to write a Eighth Doctor and Charlie story, but they were like, we could never get, like, it's just going to, just try and be more realistic, go for someone else. So I wrote like a different story. Now talking to you.
What they're saying, you'll never get McGann. Is he stopping me getting work?
No. They said, well, what they said was, it's a short trip. You won't get the actors who play the characters you write to read them. So just, you know, be a little bit less kind of specific. It's fine.
If you do it, just do a Charlie one.
I'll do it.
Just do a Charlie one.
So help me God, I'll do it.
Yeah. Just do a purely Charlie one. We can have it so that the Doctor's mute. something could have happened to him really early on.
He's taken a blow to the head.
He's incapable of speech for the entire thing. I'll happily record it for you.
Here's what we do. We get the Doctor, and he's on Earth, and he's undercover as an actor called Paul McGann, getting a role in a film called With No One Eye. And you, Charlie, becomes enamored with it. No, Charlie would hate the film because it's so crap.
Yeah. No, Charlie wouldn't like it. No. Stuff and nonsense. Charlie wouldn't like it. Yeah, that's not her sense of humor at all. No. She's much more of a good girl than I am.
100%. But like the idea of having, that'd be so cool. Just mash the universes together, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, look, is there anything else you want to kind of, that you've got coming up that you want to talk about? Are there any other like big finish things coming up that you're really excited about?
No, I haven't got any big, I don't know about any big, they never tell me about any big finish things coming up. Nick always says like, I've got Charlie spin-off series 3. I need to write that. And I'm just like, you know, I always just go, when it happens, that's lovely. Don't worry. But COVID has like, COVID has meant that my workload is fairly abysmal at the moment. So, let's just brush over.
Oh, yeah.
There's no big Hollywood movie coming up.
I'll bleep all that. I'll just have 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just fish fingers and, chips for my 8-year-old and 4-year-old. That's basically my future. Yeah.
How do you get kids to eat? I mean, do you go highfalutin? Do you try and introduce them to stuff? Or you look so tired right now.
eating and my boys is like, actually my second one is, Kit is much better, but my eldest is, can't get him to sit his bottom on a seat for the entirety of a meal. And his favourite phrase at the moment, he's about to turn 8, is I've gone off that. So things that he used to eat, I've gone off that now. So you'd write. So it's just his pool of food is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's like basically just, I am not the person to ask about how you get children to eat. I'm sure that these books that have like, 3-year-olds eating, guacamole and chili and things. And you're just like,
it's Photoshop.
How'd you manage that? Yeah.
It's all Photoshop. It's all Photoshop. It's not real kids, but no, no, I don't. But the thing is, kids don't actually, I have nieces and nephews, but kids don't actually eat. Yeah. That's the terrible truth. No.
Yeah. And they love the power. I realized I've created a terrible mistake with my eldest. He knows that, and my sister always says it's because me and my husband are such foodies that he knows it's the one thing that will really wind us up. That he's like, nope, don't want to eat that. Nope, don't want to eat.
How do you fix that? Because I've got friends who ate like 2 things when they were kids and that's all they ate.
Yeah.
Really? Mate, thank you so much for chatting with me.
Oh, no, it's been lovely. Thank you. It's been really nice.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with India Fisher. Don't forget, you can head across to bigfinish.com and check out her incredible adventures with the Eighth Doctor. And she's got a lot of stuff in the pipeline, so make sure you keep your eyes peeled. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Doctor Is In. I'm Paul, you're you. Have a fantastic week, and I promise I will see you soon. Bye, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.